I've run out of time, and I must beg you once again, you've got just a few seconds to make the mark on this show, which I very much appreciate. If you care about getting out the news you're not supposed to know, this is time to call 877-500-5266, and Pear Foggering is next, and all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 15th annual Oregon Global Cannabis March on Saturday, May 3, 2014. Portland participants will gather in Pioneer Courthouse Square to march at noon through downtown Portland. Oregon Congressman Earl Blumenauer will be speaking immediately following the march. The rally will also feature other speakers and live music. Again, that's the 15th annual Global Cannabis March, Saturday, May 3rd at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning out there. The happy May Day to one and all. My guest today is John Michael Greer, who's an author of, 30 books, including The Green Wizardry and The Long Descent, and the book we're going to talk about today, Decline and Fall, The End of Empire and the Future of Democracy in 21st Century America. John Michael Greer, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, gee whiz. You know, I have to say that I really like the cover on this book. It's a picture of a kind of a Stonehenge created out of half-buried automobiles and other automobiles kind of across the top, like lintels on the posts and everything.
Carhenge. Yeah.
Really neat. Really neat. It kind of.
I was pleased with the cover. It's always a crapshoot when you're an author. You never know what they're gonna give you. And they've done very well by me.
They sure did. Yes, yes. Well, let's get right into this book. We are in pledge drive, so we're going to be interrupted now and then to go out and ask for money. But let's talk about this book, Decline and Fall, and the concept of empire as a wealth pump.
Mm-hmm. That's, to my mind, the crucial thing about understanding empire. Imperial systems are not just systems of power, systems of violence. They're economic systems. They pump wealth out of a series of subject nations into the imperial center. And so you get predictable economic phenomena, you get predictable economic pathologies coming out of that. And that's true of every empire we know about. The empire gets rich, all the countries around it get dirt poor, and imbalances follow that lead to major problems eventually for the people in the imperial center, as well as everyone else.
I remember reading years ago sort of a statistic that really made me think that it was about Africa, you know, as a whole, that the amount of aid that Africa gets, which was, I don't know, big millions and millions of dollars, and then the amount of money that kind of gets sucked out of Africa was more than the amount of aid that gets pumped in.
Oh, vastly more. Vastly more. And notice also that the money that gets sucked out is going to increase corporate profits, while the money that comes in usually comes from citizens' donations or from tax revenues. So there's a very definite amount of pumping going on. And to some extent, it's out of your wallet into big ag, various big corporations' quarterly profits.
Well, it's kind of interesting that somehow a lot of ordinary folks think that the empire is serving their needs, but it's not. They're paying for it, but the money is sort of winding up in the pockets of the rich.
Yeah, well, one of the problems here is that, especially in the middle classes, people in the imperial center do benefit financially from this. There is so much wealth sloshing around in a successful empire that some kind of caricature of the trickle-down effect happens, and you get a lot of people in the middle classes who are living much higher on the hog than they would do in a non-imperial country. If you know any of our listeners have visited other countries that are not at the moment at the center of empire, you'll notice that middle-class people live, by and large, a much less extravagant lifestyle than we're used to in the United States. So there's always a certain amount of oversplash. There's always, frankly, a certain amount of complicity. The middle classes are the managerial classes. They're the people that the imperial center hires to manage its affairs.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about what used to be called the working class?
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have one of those in the United States because we threw them under the bus. In the process of the transitions of the 1970s and 1980s, that's very common. In the last century or so of the British Empire, for example, the working classes in Britain were in miserable condition because what was happening was all the work was being offshored to Britain's colonies, all the working class stuff, and so you had immense numbers of very, very poor people in Britain who couldn't get work, because all the jobs had been offshored, because it was more profitable to work off the arbitrage between cheap labor costs in India, let's say, and the ability to sell the product of that at a very high price in England. So the working class in an imperial state usually gets destroyed or forced down to the kind of subsistence wages that we're getting in the United States these days. It's very common.
Well, they get recruited to go fight and die for the empire, too.
Oh, yeah. That's another one you'll find. You know, we're doing it, the British day. But I mean, if you have an empire, you're going to have to have a huge military machine. You're going to have to draft, or whatever the appropriate method is, get large quantities of cannon fodder and march them off all over the world. That's one of the downsides. That's one of the ways that empires destroy themselves, because the cost of those military adventures just keeps on ratcheting up, while the amount of profit you get from ratchets gradually downward, eventually national bankruptcy.
Well, you call it catabolic collapse. So mm-hmm. Why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Okay, catabolic collapse. The idea here, lots of people look at the fall of a civilization, the fall of an empire, and say, oh, wow, it's this sudden Hollywood spectacular. Historically, it's not. It's a process, a sort of grinding down process. And what happens, what drives it, is that a society that's gotten itself wedged into this kind of imperial trap ends up having to feed off its own capital, its own built resources, all the stuff that it's amassed to run it. It has to feed off itself in order to maintain its existence as the profits from the wealth pump go down. And so we have a situation like America today where half our infrastructure is falling to pieces because the money that could have been used to rebuild it or to maintain it has all gone off to Afghanistan and Iraq and so on or nowadays the Ukraine to fund our latest round of military misadventures.
Well, and I suppose you could say the wealth pump is sucking air or something.
Exactly. It's the simple the law of diminishing returns. In 1600, when the first English merchants landed in India, India was one of the richest countries in the world. It was responsible for some unbelievable amount of the total world's GNP, and England was a backwater mostly known as a source of codfish. Okay, by 1900, this had flipped around completely. India was one of the poorest countries in the world. England was the center of the world economy because all of the wealth of India had been stripped right down to the bare walls and sent to London. The problem is, when you do this consistently, your cash cow runs dry. And that's what happened with the British Empire. They ran their colonies into the ground, sucking wealth out of them until they were sucking air. We're doing exactly the same thing right now in the United States. And our wealth pump is beginning to suck air, too. We're running on fumes.
Well, I remember reading elsewhere that, back in the old days, India had a wonderful textile industry.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the Brits moved in, they systematically destroyed it because they wanted to have their own textile industry based mm-hmm. on slave labor in the U.S. and their woolen mills and all that. And so mm-hmm. they basically that sort of puts a lie to this concept of free trade as kind of benefiting both sides. It didn't,
It doesn't. Free trade is always a line of BS, basically. It's the way that, in the modern world, it's the way that empires impose a subordinate economic position on their colonies or quasi-colonies. And the funny thing is, people knew this in the United States 100 years ago. You'd pick up an encyclopedia published in the U.S. in, say, 1890 or 1900. It talks about free trade. It says this is a really bad idea. It's being pushed by the British Empire as an attempt to destroy everyone else's economies.
Okay, I think we're going to take a few minutes now to talk to our friends out there at Membership Central, and they will tell us why you need to listen to KBOO and keep this station going.
Yes, you know, our KBOO's wealth pump will never suck air with the support of the community. That's the members, the listening audience. That is you, dear listener. You make this happen by calling 877-500-5266 with your pledge of financial support to pay the bills that Pear incurs making these phone calls and doing all that internet research and reading and everything that goes into bringing you Fight the Empire week after week after week, every single week of the year. It's going to cost $84 to bring you Fight the Empire and Press Watch, which we just heard previously. You can defray that right now. Just call up and say, I want to give $7 a month to KBOO. Bam, it's done. You have paid for this week's episode. It's so easy. 877-500-5266. Throw in with Shane and Edward, who renewed from Beaverton and Brownsville, respectively. They have tasted the fruits of KBOO and found them sweet and have come back for more. And now it is your turn. Your membership lapsed a while ago, and it's time to return to the fold. We want to welcome you back with open arms and a great big audio hug for you, and to thank you for your support. Thank KBOO for supporting your activism by making sure you are fully informed. Thank Teresa and Pear for bringing you that information. Thank KBOO for giving them time on the air to bring you what you need. So now it's time for you to bring KBOO what it needs. 877-500-5266.
That is absolutely correct. And this wild man of verbiage is working for free. This guy is a volunteer. He's putting his heart, his soul, his energy, his sweat, blood, and tears, everything into KBOO. And he's a genuine good egg. He's a nutcase, but he's a good egg, and he's donating his time. Maybe you don't have the time to donate to KBOO. Maybe you can't walk down here to South 20 Southeast 8th and walk into our station. But what you can do is you can pick up the phone and call us at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. I may be saying that a bit too quickly, but that's because I'm drinking the delicious coffee that I get here as one of the perks of volunteering here. I recommend you come down. Grendel's is the folks who donate the coffee here, and they realize how important KBOO is, and I know you do too. So please pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266.
When you make your call, maybe you can, however much you give, is put to immediate and efficient use. If it's $60 for the year, why not ask the volunteer who takes your call at 877-500-5266 to hook you up with a copy of Mr. Greer's book, Decline and Fall, The End of Empire,
Tell
and
us
the
about
Future
that book,
of
Sam.
Democracy. I don't have time to do that right now.
Oh.
I want to fill as much time with Pear and Mr. Greer. We're going to go right back to them. So call 877-500-5266 right now.
Please.
Okay, here we are back with John Michael Greer, author of Decline and Fall. Let's talk a little bit about the American Empire, which is only the latest of a series of empires that have kind of trod across this globe.
Uh-huh.
What about the American Empire?
It's pretty much a standard variety modern empire. We're basically plagiarizing the British.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that of course the United States gained its relative independence at the end of the 18th century. For a century after that time, the idea of an American empire was anathema to the vast majority of Americans. But in the 1880s, right around 1890, people were looking overseas and saying, everybody else is cashing in on this empire business, and the British Empire is not going to last forever. There was a huge debate. public debate in American life. You had Mark Twain was one of the major anti-imperialists, oddly enough. Some major industrialists, Andrew Carnegie was an opponent of the imperial, the idea that America should go out and get an empire of its own. The short form of the story, though, is that they lost. The people who wanted America to have an empire of its own, to get out there and start conquering colonies, won that round. And so we had the Spanish-American War. We stole the last two overseas colonies that Spain had, in Cuba, Puerto Rico, a couple of places like that, in the Philippines, and proceeded from there. Then, as the famous history paper has it, some other stuff happened. The British Empire ran into the first of the usual rounds of wars of its decline. We call those the First and Second World War. The United States ended up coming in on Britain's side both times, bailed Britain out the second time. It's impolite to say this, but we basically occupied Britain. I mean, if you had asked any British person, especially any British politician in Queen Victoria's time, hey, why don't you let a bunch of foreign soldiers move onto British soil and tell you what to do? You can imagine the reaction, but that's what we did after World War II. And so we basically scooped their empire, took the parts of it that we wanted, and stumbled down the same blind, self-defeating path that, you know, involves getting rich now at the cost of national collapse later.
You know, another thing you talk about in this book is sort of the empire of time. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting concept. Tell us about that.
Well, one of the ways we can understand our dependence on fossil fuels is that the fossil fuels function as imperial colonies, places from which we can literally pump wealth. There again, there's a law of diminishing returns. India, when it's prosperous and have its booming textile industry and all these resources, you can get a lot of wealth out of it. India, after 200 years of imperial rule, when it's the poorest country in the world, not so much. In the same way, untapped oil reserves of light sweet crude close to the surface, you can get an immense amount of wealth out of that, and that's what made America the richest country in the world for many years. Once you're down scraping the bottom of the barrel with fracking technology and things like that, not so much. And a country that's used to being very, very rich is struggling rather clumsily, rather ineffectively, with the fact that it no longer has the basis for that wealth. So we had two empires. We had an empire of space in our the policies that have put American troops in 140 other countries around the world right now, and the Empire of Time, where we basically colonized prehistoric past and are pumping wealth out of it. That I know the dinosaurs aren't protesting yet, but give them time.
Well, you know, that is, you know, one interesting fact that I picked up somewhere is that that first oil well in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. they struck oil, I think, at 69 feet.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then, you know, then you had all those big gushers in Texas and Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're drilling, what, miles under the ocean,
miles
horizontal
under the ground,
drilling.
Horizontal drilling, fracking, mm-hmm. all of these complicated, incredibly expensive technologies that just to create the illusion that we still have the kind of energy reserves we used to have. It's very much like Viagra. You know, you got a 50-year-old guy popping Viagra to try to feel 16 again. It's not a good idea.
Well, you know, and then right now we're supposedly, you know, all this oil from North Dakota, you know, going to make us energy independent. They call it Saudi America.
Yeah. Do you remember when the housing bubble was going and how rising housing prices were going to make us all rich?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember when the tech stock bubble was going and tech mm-hmm. stocks were going to make us all rich? This is the same thing. It's just another speculative bubble with the usual canned press releases, the mm-hmm. grandiose claims of, you know, America is still a net natural gas and oil importer by a big chunk. I mean, you had these politicians babbling about sending vast oceans of American natural gas to Europe to replace the Russians. We don't have the extra gas. We import half our gas.
That's right. And that kind of leads into this. Another thing you talk about uh-huh. is sort of the geopolitics of the heartland, which mm-hmm. is an interesting concept. I think it's really operating in this world, but a lot of mm-hmm. people don't know much about it.
Mm-hmm. The idea was suggested in the late 19th century that once you have the capacity for global reach, which came about with the sailing ships that were introduced in the 16th century by Spain and, you know, the Spanish Empire and so on, once you have global reach, the world starts shaping itself politically around a pattern laid out by geography. And the question, you always end up with a struggle between a power in the heartland being here, the core of Eurasia, extending basically from Germany east into central Russia, the heartland, and then a maritime power. Obviously, we saw several rounds of that where the heartland was Germany, and the maritime power was Britain and the United States. Then it was the Soviet Union and the United States. Now, we've got a struggle going on over the heartland itself. That's what the business in the Ukraine is about. It's one of the things the business in the Ukraine is about. And certainly, the Russians seem to be well aware of classical geopolitics. American strategy only makes sense if you assume that the people in the Pentagon and the White House and so on are thinking about classical geopolitics. So watch the periphery. Watch the periphery of the heartland. Everything that borders European Russia, you'll notice the U.S. is always trying to stir up canned color revolutions and things like that there. Mm-hmm. And the Russians are responding with a great deal of force. Because that's, as far as everyone's concerned, that's the pivot. Wow. That's where who runs the world is going mm-hmm. to be decided. Now, my working guess is they're actually wrong and that there's a second pivot zone. It's where Russia contacts China. And, I mean, it's hard to describe the raw stupidity of American foreign policy for the last 30, 40 years or so. The ultimate goal of American foreign policy should have been driving a wedge between Russia and China. Because those are the two other potential superpowers at this point. Instead, we drove them into each other's arms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to call it rank stupidity is to understate the matter considerably. We have done everything in our power to create a superpower that is stronger than we are, that has better, more resources, better technological basis, better industrial basis. It just mindlessly stupid.
And that is sort of
the pay for it.
And that is kind of the world's heartland. Well, I think right now we're going to have to take another little trip out to our membership people. And then when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about, in the time remaining, I'd like to talk about what's going to end this empire and what can we do about it. So let's go out to our membership friends.
Thank you very much, Per. And this is a really fascinating talk. We're very lucky to have this expert guest on your show. And you can show your support to KBOO and this terrific program that Per brings to you for free. But of course, free speech isn't free. It has to be paid for. We have to pay the electric bill. We have to pay the water bill. There's a lot of bills that need to be paid, but they don't add up to that much. If you can help us pay those bills, that will make everything so much more smooth and keep this terrific radio station on the air. So please call us at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. And my man Sam wants to say something.
And when you call, why not ask the volunteer who takes your call at 877-500-5266 to hook you up with a copy of Decline and Fall, The End of Empire and the Future of Democracy by today's guest, Mr. John Michael Greer. We can offer that to anyone who's giving $60 or more. How about this? Why not bump it up to $75 and Friends of Trees will plant a tree on your behalf this summer. They'll be doing that all up and down from the Portland and Vancouver metro to Salem and Eugene and Springfield metro areas, and you can be a part of that as you support KBOO. 877-500-5266. Everyone who donates $75 or more gets a tree planted on their behalf by Friends of Trees, another local 501c3, just like KBOO. And you can be doing your part, not just for the community, the media environment, but for the natural environment, the air we breathe. Plant some oxygen factories right now, on behalf of KBOO, on behalf of yourself, on behalf of your whole community. Join in with Tony, who renewed his membership right from Woodland. Woodland. We heard from Woodland. We heard from Vancouver. We heard from Whitethorn, California. I haven't heard from the northwest part of Portland yet, though. I haven't heard from Selwood. I haven't heard from Springfield or Eugene. Let's hear from you right now. 877-500-5266.
That's right. And I'd love to get a call from Springfield, Oregon. I wonder if it'd be the Simpsons. But that would be terrific. But all you need to do is pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. And what you're doing is so important. And as the tree planting project is working in cooperation with KABU, you work in cooperation with KABU by donating money. And we really literally cannot live without trees. You know that as a listener. We know that as KABU volunteers and staff. We have to have trees because they breathe out what we breathe in. I mean, it's just a matter of breathing. That simple. So please pledge your support to KBOO. It's a great radio station where we tell you the truth and we help you work out what the future holds for us as a species and also us as individuals. So please pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. And thank you very much, everybody who has called and everybody who's about to call, because I know you're out there. You just need to grab that phone. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Marcy Baking at 1625 Southeast Bybee Boulevard, and Frank's Noodle House at 822 Northeast Broadway, and La Buca at 40 Northeast 28th Avenue. These are community members that got involved in a way that made sense for them. They are providing the food today to feed and sustain the volunteers who are taking your calls at 877-500-5266. The time to become a part of this is right now, and the one to do it is you. 877-500-5266, KBOO.FM. Let's hear from more from Pear and Mr. Greer.
Sam.
Yes.
What day is it?
It's May Day.
That's
it's the
day
that you become a member of KABU.
That's right.
Pear, Mr. Greer?
Okay, here we are. We're going to wrap up this show with John Michael Greer, author of Decline and Fall. And let's talk about this empire seems to be unraveling, and it has something to do with catabolic collapse, I believe.
Well, basically, empires can fall fairly quickly. In fact, most of them quite recently. Think of the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
The British Empire was a going concern in 1939 and in history's dumpster in 1945. This is fairly common. Exactly what combination of political, economic, social, military events might kick America's empire to the curb, we have no way of knowing. That's one of those things that's hard to predict. But we do know that when it happens, the economic shocks are going to be severe. The political consequences are going to be tremendous. And that opens a window of opportunity for us if we're actually willing to do something about it.
Well, what should we do? How do we prepare for this?
How do we prepare for this? The things that I notice dealing with Americans, both people in the activist scene and people outside of it, is that very few people these days know how to do three very simple things. The first is to think without just simply regurgitating sound bites. The second is to talk about what they mean clearly, concisely, say what they want, and then sit down. The third is to use the techniques of old-fashioned democratic process to, you know, get together, discuss a situation, come up with a plan of action, vote on it, pass it, and then get home before it's 3 o'clock in the morning. These are simple skills. They can be learned quite readily. These are the skills that make democracy possible. And we have neglected them. Frankly, they have been neglected about the time that civics classes vanished from the school system because we didn't want to teach people about how democracy is supposed to work. So did these basic skills. We need to get out there. We need to learn how to run a democratic system again. I know there are a lot of people who are very fond of consensus and similar things like that. My experience with those has been very bad. And I would point out that it was about the time that activists adopted consensus pretty much across the board that the activist movement stopped getting victories and started racking up defeats.
Started having longer meetings.
Well, you see, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. When you have a consensus system, what you've done is allow any minority with an agenda to hold everyone hostage, and they do. And it doesn't work.
I hear my music playing. This has been a fascinating discussion with John Michael Greer, author of Decline and Fall, and this book is available to you. Just give us a call here at KBOO. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you for listening to KBOO Portland.
You are listening to your community radio station, 2 minutes before 10 o'clock. In just about 15 minutes at 10:15, Flashpoints features a recent speech by journalist Ali Abu Nima, founder of the Electronic Intifada and the author of One Country, a Bold Proposal to End the Israeli-Palestinian Impasse. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Sarika Mehta speaks with Salem lawyer and author Michael Pacheco about his new collection of Angels, Demons, and Chop Chorizo. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, host Patricia Welch, Emma Jackson Ford, and O.B. Hill interview award-winning young adult author Sharon Draper about her work. That's all coming up, but first it's Air Cascadia at 10. Today, City Repair founder Mark Lakeman joins host Chris Andre to talk about the 2014 Village Building Convergence. That's all coming up this morning. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a member? Well, the time to change that is right now. Membership drive is underway. Celebrate and support.
I played cards with the king and the queen. Shot them dice with old Jesse Jane. Shot them dice with old Jesse Jane.
I'm moving on Friday, May 2nd, 12 noon to 1:30. I will be featuring the music of Lori Lewis. The San Francisco Bay Area was a hotbed of traditional and acoustic music beginning in the 1960s. Starting with the Arkansas Sheiks and the Good Old Persons, she then started her own band, the Grant Street String Band. For the last dozen years, she and her partner, Tom Rosen, have fronted her band, always attracting the highest quality musicians. Blending traditional and contemporary material, she has forged a unique sound. A limited number of One Evening in May, her brand new CD, will be available as a thank you gift for your membership. Tune in Friday, May 2nd, 12 noon to 1:30.